A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We are going to be paying attention to what's going on in Massachusetts. You know, we've been talking a lot about what is happening there in the state in recent weeks with the passage of Chapter 35 or the enactment of Chapter 35. This was, H-4885 was the bill number. It is bad news for gun owners, all kinds of new training restrictions, gun bans, licensing requirements, and more. But as we've also discussed, there is already litigation underway. There is a referendum that is in the early stages trying to undo this law via the ballot box. And coming up this Saturday, there's going to be a big rally in support of the Second Amendment in Boston Common, at Boston Common, on Boston Common. I'm not sure what the correct verbiage is there, but 10 a.m. on Saturday at the bandstand there in Boston Common. Gun owners will be gathered. We're going to talk about it with Nolan Howard and Derek Hubble, firearms instructors from the Boston area. But before we do that, let's talk about this for just a second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that the central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Just text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. And now, let's turn our attention to today's conversation with Nolan Howard and Derek Hubble. The latest on the chaos in Massachusetts coming as a result of these new gun control laws. Take a look and a listen.
Nolan and Derek, thank you both for joining me on the program today. It's good to see both of you again.
Yeah, likewise.
Thank you.
So this Saturday, we've got the rally coming up at the Boston Common Bandstand. Have you been helping to get the word out about this event? I'll open it up to both of you guys.
Nolan, you go ahead, man.
All right, cool. So, yeah, I mean, we've been doing it all over social media, me and Derek. I've been talking to people in New Hampshire who said they'd be coming down. So it's – they also sued the state, too, as well. So that's a good thing. But we've been doing a lot of work. A lot of people are excited. Everyone's just waiting for the petitions to be, you know, to come out for the signatures. So that's what we're all waiting for. But I'm excited for this Saturday.
So you all still have not, I guess the Attorney General is still sitting on these forms that you all have to use to collect these signatures, right? She's got the request. She put out that request for information from gun control groups. I saw it was last week, right? Wanted to know what the gun control groups thought about this referendum. But so far as you know, anyway, the Attorney General has not certified this question, has not allowed you guys to start gathering names then.
Right. So in regards to that, everything has been submitted and there is a rough draft of the language for the ballot question. The deadline is tomorrow for that. So everything is moving ahead technically as it is legally supposed to. So the deadline is just not going to allow, most likely, for the petitions to be in hand at the rally, which is okay. We've come to this understanding that the rally will be used essentially as like the jump off party, you know, to get everybody informed and fired up for the course of action that we're taking in order to combat this, you know, to get the signatures. So we're using it essentially as a way to educate people on what they can do as a community in Massachusetts to help fight the legislation. So we'll be allowing people to sign up and join basically like the activism group that we have going on. So if someone's like, hey, I live in Middleton, they signing up underneath that town, they're the person who would then go to Middleton and collect all of the signatures from however many people we would need per town. It's roughly 12,500 per county. So everybody is it's kind of like a hands on deck thing. We need everyone to take part. You know, it's not just one person that should be collecting signatures for each town either. It's got to be multiple people. So all of this is information is going to be pushed out at the rally. We have right now, I have 15 speakers or so. So some of it being people to educate in regards to what we're doing, and others to just kind of voice their opinions or their thoughts regarding the legislation or how this has impacted them.
Yeah. And you all are not going to have a lot of time, right? Because the signatures have to be turned in, late October, mid-October?
60 days, I believe, is the time that we have.
Okay. I'm glad to know that you guys are getting ready to, hit the ground running here when these forms are back, because as you say, this is it's a pretty daunting task. And we're already hearing that the governor may be playing some games with this referendum, right? So when Chapter 35 was signed, there was no sort of emergency preamble or anything of that nature, which meant that if you guys collected, it's almost 50,000 signatures this referendum, you could actually stop this law from being enforced until a vote took place in 2026. But now I'm hearing that the governor may go back and add this emergency preamble that would keep the law in effect while the petition and the referendum process is moving forward.
That's 100% right. Unfortunately. Yep.
That is, and from what I understand, I guess she's allowed to do this, but typically these emergency preambles are a part of the legislation, right? You don't go back and you don't do this retroactively. I don't know that that's ever actually been done before. So what does that tell you about this is another game being played here when it comes to our fundamental right to keep and bear arms.
I would say yes, it's having to, if she was serious about that, she would have done that from the beginning, so now I think she's seeing the attempt to potentially combat this. And who knows, maybe she'll do it, maybe she won't. If she doesn't do it, then okay. If she does, though, and she waits until the last minute to do it, then I think that speaks a lot of volume.
Well, yeah, to me, Nolan, it would say, that they're scared you guys are going to succeed, right?
Yeah.
And so we got to, throw up this roadblock here. But I think it also just to me it the fact that this is even under consideration, and you think back to how this law was written, the lack of public input. Oh, I think we lost Nolan. Hopefully, Nolan will get back with us here in just a second. The contempt that lawmakers have for gun owners in the state of Massachusetts, for Second Amendment advocates in the state of Massachusetts, it's so evident right now that they view what you guys do, helping people to protect themselves, helping people to protect the people that they love in their lives, they view that as some sort of problem that needs to be solved. Meanwhile, ran across a story, I think it was yesterday, 5 people shot in a park in Boston. I think it was Franklin Park.
Yeah, actually, it was Sunday, the Dominican Sunday Festival.
Okay.
So that's what happened. I woke up to, I'm like, really? Like, so much for gun control.
Right? I saw another story a couple of days ago about a 14-year-old, I think it was, in Worcester, maybe it was West Springfield, who was caught with a gun, not for the first time. And yet it's the legal gun owners that are the not just the primary focus, but almost the exclusive focus of Chapter 35, right? They're not doing anything to go after violent criminals with this new law.
That's right. There's nothing in the law that is going to drastically impact crime based off of what we already know to begin with. When we think about the things that are being newly banned, since we've already had an assault weapons ban in Massachusetts for decades, and since 1989 in the city of Boston, we look at the things that have been added on, like banning, say, a 3D printer like the Ghost Gunner. Why do we need to concern ourselves with something that let's just call it what it is, a pretty nerdy hobby, you know, to talk about what type of filaments and things like that are being used, you know, to create frames. Why would a small time criminal street level organization, you know, like a small gang or something like that, spend thousands of dollars in order to purchase a ghost gunner so that they can 3D print guns and order the rest of the parts online? Like, they can just go steal the firearms or something to that effect, and it costs them no money. So it's everything is always just another step to try and prevent the general citizenry of Massachusetts from having guns that the state doesn't have any real control over. I mean, they are wanting people to serialize antiques and relics. And the things that fall underneath those categories, like, you're looking at a muzzle loader, potentially. You're looking at firearms that are so old that they did not have a serial number to begin with. And now the state is saying you must serialize and register these items. To me, that's just lunacy. I mean, prior used to allow you to have something like a musket and have it mounted up on your mantle or something like that, because it did not fall under safe storage requirements because of the fact that it was an antique firearm. But now they're saying that, oh, the gun is so dangerous that it needs a serialization, a serial number, and to be registered. That's just lunacy.
Right. It is just lunacy.
Doesn't make sense. And where can people get that stuff to serialize the stuff?
Well, so I mean, how this works in practice is, I think, a whole other can of worms, right? Because, you know, from what I understand, you're supposed to be able to take your unserialized firearm to an FFL. They're supposed to serialize it for you. How do they come up with the number? Do they have to then, you know, get a serial number from the state police? Who's keeping track of this? I mean, this is... And again, all that's an unfunded mandate, right? There's no money in there for the police to come up with a system any more than there's money in there for the police to come up with a new training curriculum that they're supposed to be developing right now. And so, I mean, there's so much chaos and confusion about how this law is going to work in practice. In theory, it's bad enough, but I think in practice it's going to be even worse. And I want to ask you, Nolan, about the training, because the last time we spoke, It was July 31st, right? The state police said, okay, stick with the old training standards until October, 23rd, 24th. But it's not the state police that issues the licenses, right? It's the local licensing authority. It's the police chief in a lot of towns, maybe the county sheriff. So what have you heard? Because you're in Suffolk County, is that right? Mm-hmm. What have you heard from the Suffolk County authorities in terms of training?
I haven't heard anything. I mean, I've spoke to a Boston PD cop.
Yeah.
He even did the law. I was like, it's stupid. There's no way. I don't know how they're going to figure this out. There's just no way. It's impossible. They only have one range. That's in Dorchester and Fields Corner. So who knows? Who really knows? I don't even think these guys even know. Because they're so short-staffed. They're dealing with other problems.
Right. Which is an issue in and of itself, because, again, if you don't have the staff there in the licensing bureau, that leads to lengthy delays. And, again, a right delayed is a right denied. So have you put on any training courses since, let's say, August 1st? Have you done any classes?
I done one. I went to someone's house, like a personal in their environment.
Okay.
So he went down to the police station, I think, yesterday. I'm basically about to drop off my wife's application. So, I mean, that was it. I'm still probably do one more week, like this last week. But then I told people, hey, listen, September, I'm not going to do anything because I can't guarantee you're going to get your license on the new requirement. So it's unheard of. It's different. It's going to cause a lot of problems. And then with, like I said, when they test them, when they do the exam, that's like, I tell people, I don't know what the answer of the score key is going to be.
Right.
Can't help you. I won't be able to help you. I won't know if you fail, pass. I don't know. That's going to be on the state.
What about you, Derek? What are you hearing from your local licensing authorities, if anything?
So So on my end, I haven't heard anything. I've still been holding class. I just had class last night. I had four gentlemen, nice guys. The week prior to that, I had another handful of people, my business partner who holds class on Saturday. The last time he taught, he had a full class. We have 12 seats, 12 were filled. And the next course that he'll be teaching on the 14th of September, that class is looking to be filled as well. So we're still, as far as my company is concerned, we're still moving forward and we'll process as many people as we can in order to help them before the deadline. And everyone is being informed like, hey, you know, the next time when you go to renew your license, if the law is still in place 6 years from now, you will have to, upon renewal, take the new curriculum course, which would include the live fire, the test. And it's most likely going to be just a longer curriculum overall based off of the amount of information that you're going to have to teach. It could go from, you know, just being a pretty standard 4-hour based safety course to, who knows, it could be 6 hours, it could be 8 hours. We still have not received any information from the state police about, hey, this is what we have been working on. There's been nothing. I'm assuming that they're going to complete everything and then they're going to say, hey, here's now the new curriculum and you have to get certified on this. I would assume that they are going to require the instructors to become certified on this, because otherwise I just don't see how that will work if they just say, hey, here's this information and just teach it in your class. How do they know if someone is talking about the right thing, or is there going to be these long paragraphs we have to read? There's literally been no, it's been mum, like church mice. It's been quiet. Yeah.
Which is crazy because, again, I mean, if you do have to get certified, that's going to be a process in and of itself, right? It's not like it's going to happen like that. So there's already some built-in delays. And when you started talking about, you don't know how long the course is going to be. It could be 6 hours, 8 hours. I wanted to say, think bigger, Derek, because, I mean, you look at, you know, look at New York, for example, right? An 18-hour training course, right? Including 2 hours of live fire training. Illinois, when they reluctantly went shall issue, I think theirs is 16 hours. I don't know that it's going to be a one-day course. Based on what we've seen just from other anti-gun states, I would not be surprised if this course ends up being 16 hours or more. Based on all of the additional information that you guys are supposed to be teaching, you know, you guys, I mean, we know the topics that have to be discussed, right? But we don't know how long you have to spend on de-escalation training, for example, right? Is that a 5-minute, hey, here are some things you can do to try to, you know, de-escalate a situation if you find yourself in a bad position? Is this a 2-hour long curriculum on, you know, maybe you've got a role play and you've got to have some, you know, exercises? I mean, this is, again, one of the many problems here, right? Is that we don't know. And it's largely left up to the state police. They have basically a blank slate to write whatever curriculum they want.
Yeah. One of the topics, just for an example, that they want us to discuss is use of force, which was never really something that the state required us to talk about prior. And anybody can look up the best document to find out the legalities regarding use of force in Massachusetts. Is a document called Self-Defense Document 9260. And it's the jury instruction that is given to jurors sitting in a use of force trial. So it's written very plainly. There's no legalese. It's very easy to understand. But this document is 23 pages long. So to cover everything that this document says potentially, which would be about 17 pages or so relating to just the general citizenry, and I believe the end of it is geared more towards law enforcement use. But that's a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, you're dealing with questions that people have. I mean, you could easily spend, I used to teach a course just based off of that document itself, and it was a 5-hour course. So to help people better understand use of force in Massachusetts. And now they're saying this has to be put in there. Okay, well, to what degree? You know, right. If it is discussing the whole entire thing, yeah, you could be talking about potentially adding hours on just that one topic alone.
You're going to have to get an associate's degree in the Second Amendment here in Massachusetts before long.
I know.
God bless. Well, I know that you guys are hearing a lot of thank yous. I hope you guys are hearing a lot of thank yous from Massachusetts gun owners for your activism. But I want you to know how much those of us outside of the state of Massachusetts appreciate what you guys are doing. Obviously, y'all are fighting for your rights, but you're fighting for our rights, too, because this isn't just going to stay in Massachusetts. These bad ideas get exported all around the country. And so not only should, you know, we be thanking you guys for picking up this fight, but we need to be supporting groups like Gun Owners Action League, Commonwealth 2A, all of the work that you guys are doing. Because, again, this is our fight, too. So I really appreciate both of you guys carving out a few minutes of your time. I hope that this weekend is a huge success. And anybody that can, you know, fly, drive, walk, pedal, get to the Boston Common Saturday, 10 a.m. at the, I think it's the Parkman Grandstand, right?
Yeah, the bandstand. I just want everyone to know that there's, you know, we have the 15 speakers lined up and to get, everyone should try to get there even just a little bit before 10. And we don't really have a set end time. The permit is until 5 p.m., but most likely the rally is not going to go until 5 p.m. It will kind of go once all of the speakers are finished. And we have some giveaways that at the end, that's where we're going to be giving away all of the various items that have been donated from a whole bunch of different companies. So we have a lot of good stuff. And I would say the gem would be J&J Arms has donated a P365 carry kit. So they're giving away a firearm and some ammo and a holster, which we're going to just be selecting like a one random person to get that item. And then we have the best rally sign contest where we have a first, second, and third place prize that's going to be done via voting from all of the people that show up to the rally. So the signs will be on display and people can put a little ticket inside of an ammo can and we'll count those. And we have some training. We have ammo to give away. We have some merch. We have a gift card from Parker Mountain Machine. We got a whole bunch of stuff. People have been just pouring out all of these wonderful donations. And I'm very thankful. All of the people that have been helping out are very, very thankful for just the kindness that everyone has been doing to show their support. So this is going to be pretty exciting. We're expecting a pretty large turnout. I have not, this was all grassroots. We really didn't put any money, so to speak, into this outside of whatever it's going to cost for the permit. Once everything's finalized, like there's a fee for electricity use and things like that. But you know, we're not serving any food, so there's no cost for food. People have been donating tables and water and chairs and things like that. The PA system was donated. This has been very low cost on all of the people involved. You know, we're not providing any transportation. A lot of people have reached out asking, well, are you guys going to be busing people in? No, we're not going to be busing anybody in because Goal had done that for a rally. I believe it may have been the last one or the one prior to that they did. And they had not a great turnout. So they spent thousands of dollars on these buses and had like 75 people at the rally. So, I don't have thousands of dollars in my wallet to be paying for busing, you know, that people aren't then going to be paying for themselves, you know. This is like, it's one of those things. If you support the Second Amendment, then it's on you to come and show your support for it in the state. Like, yeah. The prizes and everything, that was my idea to help get the draw in, you know, and get people to come. But outside of that, I don't have any way to help anybody come down other than just giving the best information possible, where to park, and all of the local transportation and things like that, which is all on We have an Instagram page now, which is 2A Boston Rally Instagram page. So you can find all of that information there, as well as my page at CSS Shooting. So there's just hours of information that is on these pages now, that so people can always send me a DM or an email or something like that. I'm very prompt at getting back to people, so that if they have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them as the clock is, you know, winding down now. So I want to make sure that everyone has the best possible information so that they can carve out time to come on Saturday.
Absolutely. Nolan, any final thoughts, man?
No, I'm just looking for a big turnout. I'm already in the city, so I'm definitely taking the train. That's what I would do. If you live in the Boston area, or take your commuter rail down to South Station. South Station, go down to, down to Park Street, the Red Line, transfer over to Park Street and the Green. You'll be right there for the Boston Commons right there. This is an everybody type thing. So you got to show up for yourself. You know, if you want, like Derek said, if you support this, come out. Because I know I do. So I'm going to be there early. Parking is very tough there on Tremont Street and State House and stuff. So I suggest you take the train or get an Uber.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for you guys. I wish that I could be there this weekend, but unfortunately I'm going to be stuck in Virginia. But, I was born in Lawrence General. So I am even though I don't live in Massachusetts, I'm a Massachusetts guy at heart, and I am with you all in spirit. You guys have an open mic anytime you want to come back and update the audience on what's going on. I really do appreciate your time. And more importantly, I appreciate your activism. I hope that you have a great turnout this weekend. And I look forward to speaking to both of you guys very soon.
Thank you.
My thanks to Nolan once again for joining us on the program. And I hope that if you are a Massachusetts gun owner, heck, even in New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, Connecticut, Rhode Island, if you can make it to Boston Common this Saturday, it would be fantastic if you get to show up and take part. And we'll be talking more about that on the program next week. All right, before we turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. You know, the DNC underway officially, a lot of talk about gun control, a lot of big plans, not a lot of specifics, to be honest, but a lot of big plans to ban so-called assaults and things of that nature. With the volatility from this election and our national debt just breaking $35 trillion for the first time ever, there's never been a better time than now to consider physical gold or silver as a way to protect your savings. If this election goes sideways, there's a good chance that things are going to get even worse. But the good news is that there's something you can do now ahead of whatever future chaos might be coming. Wealth Protection Research has found a gold partner in Sasco Gold that specializes in helping everyday Americans protect their retirement accounts like 401ks, IRAs, or TSPs using a loophole that allows them to convert it to physical gold or silver, tax and penalty free. You can find out more when you text the word TRUTH to 76626. You can break free from your captive retirement account and enjoy the peace of mind knowing your retirement savings now stored in physical gold and silver that you control. If you're interested in learning the truth about how you can protect your retirement with gold and silver, you can get a free gold investment kit that explains it all from Sasco Gold just by texting TRUTH to 76626. Drew from Sasco is standing by waiting to help. When you text TRUTH to 76626, just tell Drew that Cam sent you. And for your free gold investment kit, text TRUTH to 76626 now. All right. Today's recidivist report is a follow-up, actually, to what we talked about yesterday. These four teenagers, well, one as young as 11, in Nebraska that have been accused of murdering a 63-year-old man. And we've got a follow-up here from one of the local stations in Nebraska. This is, Channel 7, KETV. Which notes that the local police association there in Omaha is blasting a judge for releasing a teen, one of these teens, just days before this murder took place. Actually, the only problem, the headline isn't correct because we're not talking about the teenager. We're talking about an 11-year-old. So they say new court records shed light on why a Douglas County judge sent an 11-year-old home just 2 weeks before the boy is accused of taking part in a man's murder. He's one of several young boys who Omaha police say carjacked and killed 64-year-old Marsal Jamah back on August 13th. The 11-year-old cannot be detained because of his age. Under Nebraska law, apparently he is too young to face criminal consequences. But the president of the Omaha Police Officers Association says the judge could have done something when this preteen was before a judge back on July 31st. At the time, this 11-year-old faced five felonies for theft of multiple cars, as well as for having a stolen handgun. He's 11. Now, in the transcript, Judge Brown, as well as the child, agree that a shelter, not the right place for the child. The child's lawyer said he's 11. He's supposed to start school in a couple of weeks, and I don't feel comfortable putting an 11-year-old at a shelter. The judge said, well, I'm not going to put an 11-year-old in shelter. I'll tell you that right now. KTV reports that Judge Brown then heard from probation officers who expressed how well the child had done in an emergency foster placement at the Child Saving Institute, offered to take him home if the court ordered it, but then the probation officer recommended that the 11-year-old be sent home. The 11-year-old's attorney asked for a home program screening, which includes ankle monitoring, as a last resort to keep the child out of trouble, saying, quote, unfortunately, I don't know what other pre-adjudication services we have, and I'm just really concerned about this juvenile in the community safety. I guess that was the prosecutor who said that, not the defense attorney. The judge then sided, though, with the probation officer, ordered the child sent home, saying, quote, what he does between now and these next 20-some days is going to speak volumes to me. And of course, 2 weeks later, police say that this 11-year-old was one of four juveniles who took part in this carjacking and murder of a 64-year-old. Frank Patrick Dempsey is the president of the Omaha Police Officers Association. He says, you know, the judge could have sent this 11-year-old to the home program. It's an alternative to detention. He could have at least had an ankle monitor to think about his behavior, but instead we sent him home with no backing and nobody tracking what he's doing. Now this 11-year-old is due back in court before Judge Brown in late August, facing an additional six felonies, including first-degree murder. And again, while it may be uncommon for 11-year-olds to face serious, violent felonies, the law in Nebraska really doesn't allow for any sort of incarceration, even when an 11-year-old shouldn't be out on the streets. And in fact, it sounds like even placing this 11-year-old in a position where they're going to be receiving treatment and care under the supervision of the criminal justice system, that's not a possibility either. That's a problem. And I hope that is something that lawmakers in Nebraska address when they return for their next legislative session in early January. Now, today's Armed Citizen story from South Carolina, where police say a woman shot a man in her home during a second assault over the weekend. Actually, this was, on Sunday night, about 9:30. The Pickens County Sheriff's Office, Chief Deputy Chad Brooks, says deputies were called out to a home and found a man dead at the scene, 49-year-old Stephen Basquet of Pickens, South Carolina, was found dead there at the scene of the home, 9:30 Sunday night. During the investigation, deputies discovered that the woman who owns the home shares a child with Basquet. She told deputies that Basquet was assaulting her and another man that Brooks described as her male companion. Brooks said the woman shot Basquet because she was in fear for her life along with the life of her male companion. This apparently was the second time that Basquet was accused of assaulting this woman. Back on July 15th, there were charges of domestic violence of a high and aggravated nature, as well as assault and battery of a high and aggravated nature, that were filed against Basquet after an assault involving the same woman and man. He was arrested, but he was released on July 17th on a $60,000 bond. And again, apparently returned to the home this past weekend. Once again, according to the woman, began assaulting her and her male companion, which is when she was forced to act in self-defense. Police say the investigation is still ongoing, but no arrests have been made. At this point, it does appear that the woman was acting in self-defense. We'll keep our eyes open for any additional details as they become available. Finally, today in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a man in Macomb County, Michigan, who helped stop a child abduction. You know, we had another one of these stories yesterday on Cam and Company out of Tennessee, right, where an armed citizen was in the right place at the right time and was willing and able to save a one-year-old girl who had been taken by the mom's boyfriend. In this case, it wasn't a firearm that was used to stop the abductor. It was a truck. This was back on August 13th. There were two kids who were almost abducted in Macomb County, but Good Samaritans intervened. This was at Clinton River Park North in Sterling Heights, Michigan. The young girl's aunt ran up to the vehicle, began to fight with the man as he tried to drive off. But another witness intervened and used his truck to block the vehicle from leaving. That witness who intervened is a guy by the name of Scott Van Leuven. He's a member of Citizens on Patrol for the Sterling Heights Police Department. And since his literally life-saving actions, the family's been trying to reconnect with him. They were able to do so yesterday on Monday. They were able to meet for the first time since the attack. The 7-year-old girl, Olivia, 8-year-old Dominic, Olivia's mom, Corin, got a chance to say thank you in person to the man who helped save those kids. The suspected kidnapper, meanwhile, has been charged with attempted unlawful imprisonment, assault and battery, kidnapping, and reckless driving. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save a couple of kids from being snatched. Scott Van Leuven there in Sterling Heights, Michigan. We thank you for your very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Don't forget, by the way, to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. And we have a great sale running right now. If you want to become a VIP or VIP Gold member, just use the promo code FIGHT. And you can get 60% off your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content. You'll get an ad-free experience. If you're a VIP Gold member, you'll get to take part in our weekly live chat with Hot Airs at Morrissey. That's coming up on Wednesday at 1:30 Eastern. But you'll also be supporting the independent ProSec member journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And that is critically important in this day and age of big tech censorship and media bias. So thank you again for your support. Use the promo code FIGHT to get 60% off your VIP or VIP Gold membership. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.